Barnsley went home that night and looked at the birth dates of as many professional hockey players as he could find. He saw the same pattern. Barnsley, his wife, and a colleague, A.H. Thompson, then gathered statistics on every player in the Ontario Junior Hockey League. The story was the same. More players are born in January than in any other month, and by an overwhelming margin. The second most frequent birth month? February. The third? March. Barnsley found that there were nearly 5.5 times as many Ontario Hockey League players born in January as are born at the end of the year in November. He looked at the All-Star teams of 11-year-olds and 13-year-olds, the young players selected for elite traveling squads. Same story. He looked at the composition of the National Hockey League. Same story. The more he looked, the more Barnsley came to believe that what he was seeing was not a chance occurrence, but an iron law of Canadian hockey. That any time you look at an elite group of hockey players, the very best of the best, you can reliably assume that 40% of the players will be born between January and March, 30% between April and June, 20% between July and September, and 10% between October and December. In all my years in psychology, I have never run into an effect this large, Barnsley says. You don't even need to do any statistical analysis. You just look at it. What would you have seen if you'd looked at that Medicine Hat roster? 17 out of the 25 players on the team were born in January, February, March, or April. Here is the play-by-play for the first 2 goals in the Memorial Cup final, only this time I've substituted the players' birthdays for their names. It no longer sounds like the championship of Canadian junior hockey. It now sounds like a strange sporting ritual for teenage boys born under the astrological signs Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. March 11th starts around one side of the Tigers' net, leaving the puck for his teammate January 4th, who passes it to January 22nd, who flips it back to March 12th, who shoots point blank at the Tigers' goalie April 27th. April 27th blocks the shot, but it's rebounded by Vancouver's March 6th. He shoots. Medicine Hat defensemen February 9th and February 14th dive to block the puck, while January 10th looks on helplessly. March 6th scores! Let's go to the second period now. Medicine Hat's turn. The Tigers' scoring leader, January 21st, charges down the right side of the ice. He stops and circles, eluding the Vancouver defenseman February 15th. January 21st then deftly passes the puck to his teammate, December 20th. Wow, what's he doing out there? Who shrugs off the onrushing defender May 17th and slides a cross-crease pass back to January 21st. He shoots. Vancouver defenseman March 12th dives, trying to block the shot. Vancouver's goalie March 19th lunges, helplessly. January 21st scores. He raises his hands in triumph. His teammate May 2nd jumps on his back with joy. The explanation for this is quite simple. It has nothing to do with astrology or anything magical about the first 3 months of the year. It's simply that in Canada, the eligibility cutoff for age class hockey is January 1st. A boy who turns 10 on January 2nd then could be playing alongside someone who doesn't turn 10 until the end of the year. And at that age, in pre-adolescence, a 12-month gap in age represents an enormous difference in physical maturity. This being Canada, the most hockey-crazed country on earth, coaches start to select players for the traveling rep squad, the All-Star teams, at the age of 9 or 10. And of course, they are more likely to view as talented the bigger and more coordinated players who have had the benefit of those extra critical months of maturity.